So we are, last week we did Reish Samach Bey's Bey's issue with the Chola. There's a little bit here to do with Bein Hashmashos. In Reish Samach Bey's Dalad, in the Shulchan Aruch itself, we'll start there and then we'll go to the tour and then go back. Reish Samach Bey's Dalad, yeah.
Wait a second, are we...
In the Shulchan Aruch itself, okay. I don't think there was much.
Reish Samach Bey's and
Sif Dalad, yeah. So the Shulchan Aruch says Nolad Bein Hashmashos, so Monim Lo Mihalayla V'Nimo Lachi. So if he was born during Bein Hashmashos, during the period of twilights, then you count from the night, and then you give him the bris on the ninth day, which is maybe the eighth day.
Maybe it's there I am. Okay.
So Monim Lo Mihalayla V'Nimo Lachi. So you count from the night, and then you give the bris during on the ninth day, which is possibly the eighth day. I mean, you're going to push it off. The Imhotzi Rosho. Now this, so that I think we knew. Now there is a whole question about what is considered Bein Hashmashos, and so we're always going to be machmar in that question. I mean, the moment after Shkia, moment after sunset, we're going to say, okay, the baby is going to be pushed off an extra day. The only question is the other direction about Shabbos. That how late in the night do you need? How late after Shkia do you need to go in order to define it as a Shabbos bris? That's really the shaila. If the baby is born on Friday evening, as it's becoming Shabbos, so after, and it's after sunset, so it's not Vaday nighttime until when? How machmer are you going to be in order to allow for a Shabbos bris? That's a shaila. And all the molim have their own, have their shitas, have their calculations about how to measure that out.
So wait a minute. It says here you push it back. It's not Shabbos.
Right. Well, it's going to be Shabbos also.
So you would push it back even if...
Well, if it's born on Shkia on Friday night, a minute after Shkia, so not only is it going to be pushed off till the ninth day, which is Shabbos, it's going to be pushed off till the tenth day, which is Sunday. Right. Right. Well, what I'm pointing out, and this is really later on in the Shulchan Aruch. It will certainly be low bismarck.
Right, Shabbos is the issue. I'm not sure what the question is.
No. The issue is with every bris that's born twilight, when is it going to be? Is it before sunset? Is it after sunset? So if it's before sunset, so that's the day one is that day. If it was born at 5 o'clock today, right, so the bris would be, today it was Monday, so it's going to be next Monday. If it was born at 5:20 today, I'm not sure what time Shkia was exactly, but 5:30 today, it's going to be... the day later, it's going to be on Tuesday, right? Even though it's not nighttime yet. So really, the only question with regards to during the week is, we're just going to look at it, was it born before sunset or was it born after sunset? That's the only shaila that we have, was we follow Shkia, right? Lahachmer, so we're not going to allow it to be earlier, we'd rather push it to be later. The other, the more complicated question is a Friday night question. Is what if it's Friday? It's 5:20 on Friday night, so that's still before Shkia. So let's say it's 5:45 Friday night. So according to some Shitos, that's already nighttime. But Shabbos doesn't end until 6:10 this week. So that's really a machmir number. But maybe it's not such a machmir number. I mean, the whole thing is a suffix. That whole period, even going till and then does Rabbeinu Tam time come into play? And which Rabbeinu Tam time comes into play? So all of those are questions. And which are discussed later on in the sif about Simon about Shabbos bris, so we can sort of hold off on that for now. But that could ultimately push a bris off not just to the ninth day but to the tenth day, and if there's a yontif involved till the 11th, 12th, and 13th day, it could push it off for a while because of that shaila, right?
Oh. Yeah, but so that, I guess what I'm grappling with, if it's not, doesn't involve Shabbos.
Yeah.
Then
so the only number you're looking at is sunset.
Yeah.
That's okay. The only number, because then it's just going to be pushed off.
You don't want to do it on the seventh day, that's the reason.
Yes, you absolutely can't be early.
Sunset.
Okay. Yeah, that's the only number unless there's a Shabbos or Yom Tov involved. Now, the next, so then the question is, when is the child considered born? So that could be a question in terms of Hilchos Dini Nefashos, right? What point would we abort the child in order to save the life of the mother? Right, that would be one issue. And then there's the other issue. At what point, when do we start the clock, or when do we mark the time as the baby being born? So he says, Vim Hotzi Rosho Chutz LePruzder. As soon as the head is outside the Pruzder, right, to the birth canal. Mibod Yom, while it's still daytime. So it sounds like the baby is not out, but rather the baby is in the birth canal. What is that? It sounds like it's probably past the cervix. But
yeah,
that's probably what he's referring to. But yeah, so that Miba Od Yom. Oh, and I don't think and this Rosh Hashanah didn't seem to record that this didn't talk about this, but O Shishamu Oso Boche Afilu Nolan Achar Kama Yamin. Mona lo ches yamim miyom shiyatza rosho, o miyom shishamu oso boche. That if you hear it crying, even if it was born many days later, we start the eight days from when its head comes out, or from the time that we hear it crying. So why is that? The truth is, we should have gotten into the Beis Yosef, but he's quoting this from an Or Zeruah that the Darchei Moshe quotes. Where he quotes a tshuva from Rav Yoel HaLevi, where a tinok that cried from the tummy, from his mother's womb, isha ve'imo meresh ve'osa shah hayamunach bebitnach. If you want to see it inside, you could. It's in the tour though. You got to go. We should have started here, but in the tour, in the Darkei Moshe, so Darkei Moshe quotes the Or Zeruah, this baby that was crying out from its mother's womb, ve'imo meresh shebeosa. At that time, it was still in its womb. Kishar yamin v'lo ha'isa makshalid. She wasn't having any birth pangs or anything. There's just baby crying. So achar kach kamo yom shalem upasak demonin lo mishas leida. Afagav destam vlados inam tzvuchim ashamutzim roshayim. So they, in that case, they said, well, because the mother wasn't feeling anything, even though a child doesn't start crying until it takes its head out, mipruzder from the birth canal, viaz have a kiyalod, and then it's considered born, mikomakom kan she'im omeres she'atino kaya munach mikvarishona, ne'meres, that if the mother says, no, nothing happened, we just have this baby crying, she's believed, do you have a rosh chutz l'pruzder, ha'isamakshi leid miyat, then she would have felt it. So if you hear the child, then the assumption would be, and the mother is feeling birth pains, so already at that point the clock could start the clock. But if you somehow hear the child, so this is just like an odd thing.
It's difficult.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So the fact that Nishmas Avram doesn't talk about this at all is indication that this is not really so lemaisa. But nevertheless, there was this occurrence that happened at some point where this Shiloh was raised. So the Ramah continues and says, yeah, v'yishrom dafka. So he said that if you hear it crying, as soon as you hear it crying, no matter what. So comes the Ramah and says, v'yishrom dafka bistam. Avalimimo omeres. That's only regular. But if the mother says that tino kaya munach bevitna, that the child is still in the womb, k'mo b'shar pami, like the rest of the time she was pregnant, v'lo yela chivli, she's not having any pangs, klal, afal pisha shamu bocha, even though they might hear the baby cry. Monin lo miyom halei. They're still going to count from the day of birth. The afal gav delo shkiach sheyivke below hotzas harosh. Even though it's uncommon that the baby cry without taking its head out outside of the pruzder, mikol makom ha'im nemeres lomar shehayim munach kemo b'shar yam muvachad. The woman is believed to say that the child is has not moved. It's like it has been all other days, and therefore don't.
We don't count that.
And we're not going to start counting that. Yeah. Okay, so just interesting, believe it or not, the tshuva over there. Yeah. So one other sif. If you go to Sif Zion, last one on the page. Actually, there was an interesting note here. Yeah, the real question: what does the head mean? Does it mean the head, or does it mean the forehead? So the Prisha writes the Shulchan Aruch means most of the forehead. But Shlomo Zalman said no, most of its head is what the Shulchan Aruch meant. And what does this mean? So this born when his forehead emerges from the cervix into the pruzder, and now it emerges into the world. So as soon as most of the head is in the pruzder, that's going to be considered the time when we're going to start counting, which probably is not the same time that they. That the doctors start counting from it, right? It's probably a moment or two before that, depending on how quickly things are progressing. So that's another thing to keep in mind if you're in one of these tight slots of being a shmashos, of trying to calculate exactly what time the baby was born.
Look at the clock as the baby's coming down the birth canal.
I don't know.
I can see the head. You look at the clock and then
make sure it's a boy.
Right. Yeah.
How are you going to do that?
Right. And then he actually has, he quotes from the tour. The tour points out if the baby is born in breech, so then the moment would be from when most of the body has come out. So he quotes here from Shlomo Zalman. Shlomo Zalman says that when the umbilical cord has, when the, I assume that means the umbilicus, which I assume is the umbilical cord, right? That's doctors. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So that's when that appears into view. That would be the moment that we would start counting the, that would be the time that we would use when the baby's coming up from the feet first. Okay. There is in Sif Zion here, so he quotes here from the, so Machaber says, and quoted from a Goes Maimony. Yeah. Although I couldn't find it inside the Goes Maimony. It keeps saying Sham, and the Shulchan Aruch also said Sham. So anyway, but it says, Ein davar zeh talui b'tfila, im yitpalu mivod yom, lo lahakav lo lahachmer. That has nothing to do with tfila. So this is, I wasn't sure what to do with this, right? So, I mean, in a community. So this shows up in Hilchos Avelos and in Hilchos Nida, that if the child, if the baby, if the community has already daven marv, there's an early marv in the community, so does that already start counting for the next day? So so it seems like yes and no. I mean, Shulchan Aruch seems to assume yes in those cases. That if the community is already daven marv and the woman all of a sudden, oh, I need to do a hefsek tara, so seems to say that that would be problematic to do a first bedikah before starting to count the 7 days. And the same thing by Avelis. And Avelis also, if the community has started davening marv early, so then you can't count that day as Avelis. Now, if Shlomo Savolovsky, when I learned Tilchos Nida and Avelis with him, he makes the same point that the Ramah, in only one of those spots, and only in Hilchos Nida, does he say that you can count it. In Hilchos Avelis, he doesn't say that you can count it. So why would that be? So some say, well, he just didn't, and he really means it by both, that the Ramah would hold that you could count those days. He said that, no, he thought that there's a difference, because when it comes to Hilchos Nida, you're trying to establish seven, you're trying to do a Hefsek Tara before counting 7 days. So you don't have to count that day separately as a day. As opposed to in Hilchos Avelos, you're trying to count that day as a day. So if the shul is already Daven Marv, you can't count that day as a day anymore. So I was trying to figure out if this fits in with that issue or not. The issue of, I mean, here the Mechaber is differing from those. There the Mechaber said that we do take the davening into account, and here we say we don't. I don't know why not. I didn't see it really a discussion why we would distinguish. Especially also the issue comes up, I saw in the Nishmas Avraham, because it talks about the issue of time zones. What if you move the baby in the middle of the 8 days? So does that alter the 8 day count? Now, you're generally not going to be flying a baby that much then.
Yeah.
But so I don't know. I don't know what to do with this, but that is a simple psak. Nobody seems to have any problem with this psak of the Chabad.
So we go by the astronomical time.
So we don't go by the davening.
That's what it says.
We don't go by davening, yes. Right, as opposed to those other two halachos where the Mechaber said you do.
Go by astronomical phenomena. Sunrise, sunset.
Okay, so
sometimes on, you know, Friday you don't really early.
What do you mean?
Fridays, some people don't.
For Plaga Mincha?
Yeah.
Okay. And that's probably pretty common.
A couple of hours.
That probably used before, to be, I mean, are, yeah. Probably before electricity, that was probably pretty common. Okay, so take a look here at the... This is quoted here in the Shulchan Aruch. But if we... I'm not sure there's much Ed here. I think there was a Gemara in the previous. But okay, let's just stay in the Shulchan Aruch here. So in Simon Reish Samach Gimel. So he says, Katan Shehu Yarok. So here we get into the yellow baby. So a child who is yellow. Simon Shelo Nafal Bo Damo. So that is a simon that its blood has not yet fallen, whatever that means. That's the language that the Gemara uses. That the blood, we understand that the liver hasn't started beating the bilirubins that are floating around, and if you have too high bilirubins, the liver hasn't started working, so the baby is going to have a yellow issue. So the ain molinoso, so we don't give. So this is an explicit Gemara. So the ain molinoso ach yipol bo damo. So you're not going to give him the bris until the blood falls. V'yachsur mareyu kemara sharkatan. Then it looks like the other children. V'chein nimsa edom, the same thing. The Gemara talks about both red and yellow. V'chein nimsa edom simen shelo nivla damon be'ivarv. That means that the blood has not been absorbed into the into the limbs. So ella bein or labasab, rather it's still just between the skin and the flesh. So the same thing. Now, I don't think they have, in the Shmos Avram here, it says we don't really have this idea of red children. We're not really sure what he means. It could be that it's a blue child. That blue children, that children sometimes look blue. Maybe that's what he's talking about, but not red. What's that?
There's a medrash about Esav.
Oh, that this is what it meant, that Esav was born red?
Red, and Yitzchak, therefore, was a place in the wrist. And then I guess I don't know whether he ever turned normal. And so anyway, Yitzchak said, well, if we don't do it on the eighth day, we'll do it when it's bar mitzvah, because that's when Yishmael had it. But then Esav didn't want it. So he never had.
That's how it is, right? See, I'm not sure what the Chazal mean. However, the Zechar Abris in this context describes a bluish baby who is breathing with difficulty. It would appear, therefore, that he's discussing a baby who is suffering from either a lung and or heart problem, but this is apparently not the problem that the Shulchan Aruch discusses. Anyways, so yeah, he's not sure. He's not sure what that is referring to.
He wouldn't want to do a bluish baby either.
Yeah, okay. So, and not going to give it birth until it absorbs the blood. But this is a quote from the tour. Lashna tour. You have to be very careful with these things. To not give a bris to a child that has a concern that it's sick. Why? Because the chanas lechashos beats out all of the other considerations. It's possible to always do the bris a little bit later, but it's not possible to return the Jewish soul to the world. Right? So be careful. Always better to push it off rather than to rush it. Now, there is a question which on this whole simon here, which is, okay, it says you have to push it off until the yellowish goes away. How long are you pushing it off? So we already learned that there's different types of illnesses that would cause the postponement of a bris. One is if the child is sick and echad meivarev, has like one issue someplace, so then you would, as soon as it's better, you would give it the bris. However, if it's the whole goof, so then you would have to wait 8 days. So what is being referred to here? Do you wait, as soon as the baby is yellow, you do it right away, or do you hold off? So in the Piskei Tzachin L'Tshuvos here, he says that he collects one of these like massive footnotes that seems to quote everybody, saying that, no, we all assume that you would do the bris right away. That it's not considered a chola b'chol haguf under most circumstances, unless it's very bad. And therefore, as soon as it goes away, which it seems to remark that it suddenly goes away.
I don't think things happen suddenly in the body.
Right, but that's the way it's like described. All of a sudden it goes away, so therefore you would do it
4 hours.
Right, so it goes away pretty quickly. Now, it did have one makor the other way, which I would be interested in maybe asking some of our neighborhood friends here. It says that the Tzemach Tzedek was on the other side of this machlokas. Tzemach Tzedek was the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, he apparently is quoted here, look it up inside, but he apparently is quoted as saying that you need to, that that's considered a chol b'chol aguf, and therefore you should wait. So I don't know if Lubavitch practice. The yellow is considered a chol b'chol aguf, and therefore you'd have to wait even after a jaundice shot. You have to wait the full week. So I don't know if Lubavitchers are machmer on this, or I don't know if that means, whatever it is, machmer or mekel, I don't know if they do this or they don't do it, but such a shita apparently is out there. We can ask them. Now, in the Nishmas Avram, though, he quotes a couple of more of further complications about this. He starts off by saying, depends why there's jaundice. Jaundice could be, he calls pathological jaundice versus physiological jaundice. Pathological, he refers to as the result of some kind of disease, and as opposed to physiological, which just means that it's yellow. So we generally, when we talk about the child being yellow, we're generally referring to the physiological thing. But if he says the bilirubin count is 20 or more, it might require a transfusion, and if that's the case, that would be considered chola b'chol haguf. So there is a point where this type of jointing would be considered chola b'chol haguf, and you would have to wait. In fact, here he quotes from Rav Yashiv, that rules that the bris should be postponed until the bilirubin level is normal. If the bilirubin level reaches 18, he rules the bris can be done only after you have to wait 7 full days. He told me that even if the accepted medical opinion, a baby with physiological jaundice may be safely circumcised, nevertheless, we don't accept their opinion, because Chazal gave us a psak when it comes to the jaundice babies, and we're not going to change that psak. Now, he has one other further machlok, which also harkens back to something that we learned, and that is, apparently 18 or 20 is considered to be pretty bad. I don't really know what to do. I remember the first time when I learned Hilchos Mila in Yeshiva, sort of Tendler was giving the Hilchos Mila Shirim, and I think I came in like 5 minutes late, and he was talking about bilirubin count, and I had no idea what he was talking about. I was married already, but I had no idea, I'd never heard the term before, and I'm sitting there, who is he talking about? Who is bilirubin? Why is he, what is, really, it took the entire, what? I was that guy, and I'm afraid to ask, because he yell at me for coming in 5 minutes late.
Maybe the Bob. Billy and Bob.
Yeah. So I was one of those people who was really wondering, what in the world is he talking about? But he says there, if it's 18, he quotes from Norwood that you have to wait 18, and therefore you have to wait 7 days for the recovering after it drops from 18. So he says that he asked for Shlomo Zalman that he didn't understand that, because what did we learn? That after, if you are chol b'chol haguf, which is what you're saying, when do you start the 8-day count? Not when you get below chol b'chol haguf, but when you get healthy again. So if that's the case, you have to wait for it to be healthy and count. And that apparently was the psak of Rosh Hashanah. So it seems like if there's an extreme jaundice case where that would warrant this waiting 7 days, you would not just wait for it to drop a little bit. You would wait for it to for the baby to be completely healed before you can go ahead with the before you'd go ahead with the bris.
I don't know what the normal
bilirubin is. Yeah, I think the point, if I recall, was I really
because I just looked at some bilirubin counts today in a case.
Why not?
And it was just in a case at the time.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember him throwing around the number 7. What his talk was about, again, and I will claim that I really wasn't sure what he was talking about, but I think what he was referring to was that you don't necessarily, he was trying to advocate that you shouldn't just go by a number, that there are some molim that have a mesorah that 7 or 9 or something. He says it's not about the number, it's about the trend. That was his point, that if it was higher and now it's trending down, so even if it's a bit of a higher number, you would be okay with the bris so long as the trend is going in the right direction. I think that's what he was saying, but I would not... the Shiloh came up, I would investigate at the time.
Michael was drawn this, and we didn't... The doctor and his bilirubin must have been high. I don't remember what it was, but the doctor said it was okay to do the bris, and then it was the Morial's decision, and he just came and looked at him one day and said, okay... It's okay.
Yeah.
And he didn't take another reading,
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that I'm hearing from reading through this is that the doctors are not really concerned about this. That they don't think the bris really has much to do with the jaundice issue. So they'll say, yeah, go ahead and do it. But so the Moalim have that's where the Yashav Sak comes in. Or we see this trend in Hilchos Mila, that things that we have our own Mesorah for, so we're not going to follow the doctor's advice, at least look. I'm not sure whether to tell Hachmer or Lahakel, but to do a bris earlier based on the doctor's advice. We would hold off based on our Mesorah. And with regards to the jaundices, the Moalim have their traditions as to what that is.
So the normal indirect bilirubin would be under 5.2 milligrams per deciliter within the first 24 hours of birth.
It's about 5.
Yeah, that's what I recall. That's higher than for an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So there is a pischei tshuva here on the yarok, on the yellowness. So he says kasa in the first reish samach gimel aleph. So kasa v'sefer chamudi Daniel. So the chamudi Daniel is actually in pischei tshuva here.
Bottom of the
reish samach gimel aleph. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the Kosen Sefer Chamud Daniel is a sefer that's quoted somewhat regularly in the Piskei Tshuva. But I don't think we have a full edition of the Chamud Daniel. I think it's just whatever the Piskei Tshuva quotes from him. His most famous psak is something that makes the sofrim a lot of money, but he's the one who paskin that you need to put a mezuzah on a room that is less than 4x4 amos if it has a use. So he's the walk-in closet chumrah. So, but anyways, here he writes. So it's a tino chamud daniel ksaviad, right? Chafiad ksaviad. I think he's always quoted that way. The tinok shelo kashu es hatavur kiroi v'yatsi menu dam harbe nearest the ein lamolo ad shis chazik v'yavolo dam acher. That that if the tavor is the navel, that the navel hasn't closed appropriately and it's still bleeding, so that would also be a reason to postpone it.
Sounds like they're tying off the umbilical cord.
I mean, they would tie it.
The low kosher, they didn't tie off.
Appropriately, and therefore blood is coming out. That would be considered enough to postpone it. Yeah. Okay. Actually, that's all for Aleph. All right. Beis is another sugya, which Baruch Hashem we don't have to worry about too much anymore. But it says Isha Shemila Bana Rishon Umeis Umachmas Mila. So you have the first child who was born, and then died due to Mila. Now it's a little hard to know what that's the case, but I think we assume any time a child dies, the psak is that any time a child dies after a mila, when he has not yet been healed from it, would be considered a mesa machmas mila. So if the child is...
What does it say, Isha?
Oh, well...
Isha Shemala.
Was we're following the mother's children.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but the point is going to be, it's the mother's children regardless of how many husbands there were. Okay, so Isha Shemala Bina Rishon Umeis Machmas Mila Shehechshila Kocho Kocho, right? Umala Gam Sheni, then also, because it lost its strength. Umala Gam Sheni, and then also give a verse to the second one, Umeis Machmas Mila. Hare Huchsaka Shebaneha Mesim Machmas Mila. So the Chazaka becomes that her children die as a result of Mila. So Loshna Mibal Echad, O Mishnah, it doesn't matter whether it was one husband or two husbands. Velo tamul hashlishi el tantim lo ad shiyagdil v'yizchazik kocho. So you don't give a bris to the third one, rather you wait for it to get older and have be stronger. And similarly, the same thing would be the other way. If it's one man, mal bino rishon v'sheni umesu machmas mila. They both, his first two boys die because of mila. So lo yimol hashlishi bein shehayu lo meisha achas b'mishnayos. So you're not going to give a bris to the third one, whether it's from one woman or from two. And then he says v'ish cholkim esfir lohu delo shayach b'ish rak b'ish. Right? The Gemara only talks about in the context of a woman. That's why the Shulchan Aruch starts with that quote. So the Shulchan Aruch turns around and says the same thing would be by a man. So the Rama says not so fast. That might not be the case. It might only be the woman why. But nevertheless, with all these things, we would say Safik Nefashos Lahakel. We'd say Safik Nefashos, that we would be lenient. Now,
so why aren't you even careful for the second baby? I know that's not a... I mean, I would think that would seem to...
Well, I think you would say...
Safik Nefashos Lahakel. I would think that, you know, once one baby dies, that you would be careful the next one, huh?
I mean, you might be careful, but I don't think you would post. The point is, you wouldn't postpone a mila without any other without another factor present. I think that would be the psak.
This has been cited as proof. I think it may be talking about hemophilia, which is carried on the X chromosome, so you get it from your mother. The boys get it.
Yes.
I don't know if it's really the case.
Right. Yeah, I remember when we came across the sugya once, Rashakla said, yeah, like the baby had a hemophilia. But I don't know if it means hemophilia. I mean, the Gemara is talking about a scenario. So, but the hemophilia is through the father.
No, you get your X from your mother.
The
male would get his X from his mother, and it's carried on the X chromosome.
So it's carried on the mother's side, which is why you only have to worry on the mother's side, not the father's side.
That's a good gene. Right, because the male only has one X.
Yeah.
So, and that's where the clotting factor of hemophilia is on the X. So, very, very few women get hemophilia, you probably know that.
Meaning women don't get it, but they're the one who pass on the gene.
It could be heterozygous.
They would have to have two X's with hemophilia to get it, which would be very rare.
Okay.
But If you have one X, you can carry it.
Right. So women carry it, men have it. That's how it works. Okay, so that might be why it would only be a problem by a woman. Okay. In the he has a whole section here about hemophilia, where he suggests. I mean, there are ways of treating it nowadays, and if you could treat it, so then you would be able to give the bris, right? Especially if you knew it was there. But he has. Then he has a discussion. What about giving a bris with a laser? Which would therefore cut down the bleeding. Is that permissible or not? So that's a machlokas, whether blood is an essential part, which I found surprising because, like, sort of in America, like, that's just the assumption. Plus, Rav Moshe had a whole a problem with some of the clamps, because the clamps that some of the molim, I don't know if you'd call them molim, ritual circumcisers would use, would be these clamps that would really cut out the bleeding entirely. I mean, they would cut it out, and then there'd be no blood that would come in, and then they could do the bris, and there'd be no blood. So Rav Moshe was very anti those types of clamps because there's no blood, and he felt that blood was ma'akiv. So apparently not everybody assumes that blood is completely ma'akiv, and therefore there are those who permit it to be done this way. Yeah, okay, but does that mean that it's a ma'akev part of the mila? So Rosh assumed that it was. Others are not so.
Well, the titsa, though, they're supposed to be sucking the blood. Yeah.
Okay, fine. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it's ma'akev. So we assume certainly it is, and those clamps really are not used. I mean, the clamps that they use are really shields, they're not really clamps. I remember when I learned mila, it was Tendler. I think Rav Tendler brought one in and showed, like, it was one of these, like, looked like those stocks, you know, where you put your head, right? That's a lot of that, and then you squeeze it and turn it, and it didn't look like it would be very pleasant for the child involved.
So the laser means you use the laser to prevent the bleeding, or you have to cut with the laser?
That you would cut with the laser. That was the thing. So there are two reasons. Number one taina is that there would be no blood. The other taina is that you're not really cutting with a laser. You're just guiding a laser. So it could be that you're missing a maisa mila if that's the case. That's discussed here. I didn't look at the original sources.
I'd say a laser is probably more dangerous than the scalpel.
They also suggested here that maybe a laser would be good to use for an adult. If an adult needed for any bris, that was also part of the Shiloh here.
Laser or razor?
Yeah, there is. I will get. I think in Hilchus, this shows up in the Pesukei Teshuva discussion Hilchus Mila about if there's a person who's in Hilchus Geiris. If a ger wants to convert and he can't get a bris, does that mean that the game's over, or does that mean is there something that we would do for him without? So that's a Hilchus Geiris sugya. Yeah, so then there's a discussion here in the Pesukei Teshuva in Hay about, okay, so does that mean, what about this, does that mean the child never gets a bris? Or does it mean we wait for the child to get older? Actually, that's in the Shulchan Aruch itself says, Ad sheyagdol v'yischazi kochma, until it gets older and has its strength. In the Pesukei Teshuva Hay, it looks like Gimel, Dalet and Hay are discussing this. But in Hay, he quotes from the Nod of Yehuda, and so about halfway through, he says, "Vanuka Yosef Atur v'Shulchan Aruch Pasukein Miyavul Haracharehim V'Lachein Im Tino Kazeh Roim Bo Shehu Beria V'Chaza Kederach Shar Kol B'nei Gimel." Once the child is 3, and he looks like he's like a regular 3-year-old, Shanim. Vegam mare panav tzehuvos, and he's got a nice complexion. Velo yirokos, and he doesn't look green, I guess, anymore. So yamolo oso, you give him a bris. V'tov lashkiach shiye bizman shayom hu zach me'ha'avir, that it would be good to do at a time when it's the sun is bright. V'chidaihu mitzvos mila shetagin shelo yazik lo klal, and hopefully the mitzvah of mila will protect him that he won't get any damage at all. So Ayin Sham, that's what the Nod Yehuda said. Vayim b'shuvas Cham Sofer shepalpam zev v'luchiach shadasa poskim hanal amuchrach. That makes sense. So this doesn't really come up anymore nowadays. But apparently, so minhag was to hold off until the child was at least 3, and hopefully be able to give him the bris at that point. But if he had hemophilia, you'd be able to figure out. There is actually I noticed the thing. If the kid has hemophilia, another thing Nishmasavram pointed out, he says, well, then the child should be considered a cholish kol haguf anyways, So how are you allowed to give the bris if the child is considered cholish or kol aduf? So he said that, I think a quote from Shlomo Zalman, I just can't find the spot, that he's not really considered chol b'chol haguf, because he's only a problem when he's bleeding. So if he's not bleeding, he's healthy. So therefore he wouldn't be automatically qualified as a chol b'chol haguf, and therefore you would use this dispensation to exempt him. I don't quite understand that either. So, like, if you knew the kid had hemophilia, I don't think you would give the bris the first time. I mean, the Gemara's scenario is where you don't know any better. The kid turns 8 days old, so you give him the bris. But if the child is diagnosed with hemophilia, I don't think anybody's, you know, doing a mila to the first kid, right? We're holding off until we're able to make it better. So, anyways, that's the sugya. It's also, by the way, it's the third kid, right? When do you form a chazaka? So the Gemara has an achlokas. Is it the third or four number three is the chazaka? So it actually splits the psak. That sometimes yes, sometimes no. You sort of have to know which one it is. But for this, for something in Hilchos, the dini nafasha, so something to fashal akel, you would say the chazaka formed after two for the third one, as opposed to waiting for three of them.
So that's my question: is that they instead of this, they were instead doing three, they did two. I would say. Or
the
just do one, you know.
Okay, so if you could diagnose it, you could diagnose it. And I would assume they'd be more careful then also. I think the thing is, in the absence, I think that's what you're saying, in the absence of any other reasons to tell you not to, so then you would say, let's do it on day eight, as opposed to if for the third kid, even in the absence of any reason not to, we would still say to hold off for a while. I think that's how you would put it. All right, have a good evening.